That was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey has ordered the detention of more than 40 journalists. As a crackdown against the July 15th failed coup continues, the government said it's investigating possible criminal conduct, while the media group Progressive Journalist Association fears a witch hunt against journalists who are critical of the government. Regional analyst Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco says it would appear President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is trying to solidify his grip on power.
Despite the broad opposition to the coup across the political spectrum in Turkey, it appears that Erdogan is using it as an excuse to crack down on any and all opposition.
The crackdown aimed at those who were believed to be allied with exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, currently in the U.S., whose extradition has been demanded by Ankara. Turkey accuses Gulen of being behind the attempted coup. Gulen has denounced the coup attempt and denied taking part in it. Tens of thousands of soldiers, civil servants, police, academics, and judges have been targeted in the two-week crackdown that has been criticized by the European Union.
Je crois que la Turquie, dans l'état où elle se trouve,
EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said Monday he believes Turkey in its current state is not in a position to become a member of the EU anytime soon. South Sudanese leader Salva Kiir has replaced his first vice president and rival Riek Machar and appointed Taban Dungay as his replacement. Machar named to the post just last April as part of a peace agreement ending more than 2 years of civil war. The rivalry between Mr. Kiir and Machar erupted into violence early this month, threatening the peace deal. Machar left the capital, Juba, and has refused to return until an international buffer force is created to separate rival fighters. Mr. Kiir gave him an ultimatum to return or be replaced. This is VOA News. A 27-year-old Syrian migrant who set off an explosion, killing himself and wounding at least a dozen people in Ansbach, Germany, early Monday, was, according to the Islamic State's news agency, a soldier of the IS group. But various top security officials told reporters Monday the attacker recorded a video on his cell phone pledging allegiance to the leader of IS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi.
Was mir aktuell besonders wichtig erscheint, ist
German Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière has ordered beefed-up security at transport hubs and elsewhere. Officials say the attacker tried to kill himself twice before and had received psychiatric treatment. UN Syria envoy Stefan de Mistura reportedly is to meet Tuesday with senior U.S. and Russian officials in Geneva in a fresh bid to revive suspended talks on Syria's political transition. Monday, U.S. officials cast doubt on the prospect for a military partnership with Moscow in the fight against the Islamic State. General Joseph Dunford is the U.S. chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Our engagement with the Russians is limited to contacts to ensure safety of flight and the safety of our people on the ground. Secretary Kerry is negotiating at this time or discussing with the Russians some other alternatives. But without seeing that a specific framework within which other contacts may be made, it's hard for me to comment on whether or not it'd be viable.
Defense Secretary Ashton Carter said Russia is focused mainly on supporting the Damascus government, which he said has only prolonged the conflict. In Japan, at least 19 people killed, dozens more wounded, after an attack by a man with a knife at a facility for the disabled. It was Japan's worst mass killing in decades. Media reports say police arrested 26-year-old former employee Satoshi Uematsu. The attack occurred in Sagamihara, southwest of Tokyo, the motive unclear. The Democratic Party, holding its national convention this week in Philadelphia, heard First Lady Michelle Obama late Monday make the case why former Secretary Hillary Clinton should be elected the next president of the United States.
What I admire most about Hillary is that she never buckles under pressure. She never takes the easy way out. And Hillary Clinton has never quit on anything in her life.
Mrs. Obama said Clinton is the one candidate ready to be president. There was division at the convention with supporters of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders disrupting some speakers after his strong challenge to Clinton for the party's nomination. Sanders is endorsing Clinton late Monday. The Solar Impulse 2 ended a 17-month round-the-world odyssey, becoming the first sun-powered plane to circumnavigate the globe. The Swiss-engineered aircraft returned to Abu Dhabi Tuesday, where its two pilots began their historic 42,000-kilometer journey in March of 2015. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 26th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan President will today swear in the replacement of his former first vice president.
Today, July 26th, General Thaban Dengai will assume the position of the first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan. He has been nominated by the SPLM in opposition.
Ezekiel Logat Kuov is the former Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLA in opposition. An official of the SPLA in opposition says President Salva Kiir is out to assassinate his former first vice president. Zimbabwe's opposition MDC says President Robert Mugabe must leave office or it will launch more protests next month. And a majority of Kenyans want the Dadaab refugee camp closed.
The solution is pacifying Somalia. We are having another challenge now coming out of southern Sudan. So if we withdraw the KDF from Somalia without having pacified the country, then definitely we are going to have more severe security challenges.
George Musamale is the director of the Center for Risk Management in Africa. An African film shows effort in Ethiopia to stop killing children considered cursed. And we'll take you to the Democratic Party National Convention in Philadelphia. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The apparent disarray in South Sudan's former rebel movement comes full circle today when Riek Machar, the former rebel leader and first vice president in the transitional government of national unity, will formally be replaced by his one-time chief peace negotiator, General Thaban Dengai. South Sudan President Salva Kiir announced last week that he had fired Machar and replaced him with Thaban Deng. Machar went into hiding following clashes between the two forces earlier this month. Today, Tuesday, Thaban Deng will be sworn in as first vice president. Ezekiel Logat Kuov is the former secretary for foreign affairs of the SPLA in opposition. He says Thaban Deng has the support of the entire SPLA in opposition.
Today, July 26th, General Thaban Dengai will assume the position of the first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan. He has been nominated by the SPLM in opposition, a party to the peace agreement which was signed in 2015, August, in Addis Ababa, to end the war in South Sudan.
Ezekiel, are you saying that Thaban Deng is a supporter or represents the entire SPLM in opposition, the military wing and the civilian wing?
Yes, definitely he is representing. You know, Thaban Dengai, he's known to the SPLM, SPLAIO. He has been the chief negotiator. He was the one who negotiated this agreement in Addis Ababa. He's a general in the army. He also participated in the War of Liberation since 1983. So he has the support of the army and also the support of the party as SPLM-IO. And he has a lot of support from South Sudanese. Because South Sudanese, they are supporting peace. They are not supporting individuals. They are tired of war. They want peace. And whoever is interested in implementing the peace that was signed, they will support that. And we are also appealing to former first vice president, Dr. Machar, to come to Juba so that we can implement the agreement together.
So let me ask you first, Ezekiel, you, Thaban Deng, and the others, do you trust President Salva Kiir? You say you want peace. Do you trust him?
Yes, I trust him because he has signed this agreement with us as SPLM in opposition. He was not forced to sign it. He voluntarily signed it, and he is still interested in seeing the agreement implemented.
Ezekiel, I want you to take me back earlier this month to the fighting that took place in Juba. Did you and other members of the SPLM in opposition connive with President Salva Kiir's forces to assassinate Dr. Riek Machar? Because this is the allegation that's being made by some of Dr. Riek Machar's supporters.
Let me be categorically clear to you. There was no plan or conniving of anybody against anybody to kill anybody. I would put squarely the blame on the guards. I don't know how it started, but let me tell you, if it was not because of President Salva Kiir Mayardit protecting us in J1 or in the presidential palace, I would not talk to you today. He protected me as Ezekiel Logat Kuov. He protected First Vice President Dr. Riek Machar. He protected Vice President James Wanyika, who was also there.
We have spoken with you on many occasions, and you have referred to Salva Kiir as a dictator. When did he stop to be a dictator?
Well, after the agreement was signed, we have reconciled. Yes, I've been saying words that are harsh to him and that are harsh to others, and I have been expressing my views. If I see something that is not going right, I will also go to him and tell him, Your Excellency, this is not going very well. Because now, after we have agreed to work together in one government, and based on the agreement, that has made me to say, well, he has opened a new page with me, and I must work with him. And that is when I have decided to also say, well, you are not a dictator anymore. You are cooperating with us. You are working with us. You are implementing the agreement with us. Let us work to implement this agreement.
Ezekiel Lo Gatkuov is the former Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLA in opposition. He was speaking with me from South Sudan's capital, Juba. An official of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition says General Taban Deng Gai, who is being sworn in today as first Vice President of Sudan, does not represent all of the former rebel movement. Goy Uyol Yol, SPLM in opposition representative to Ethiopia and the African Union, says President Salva Kiir is not interested in peace.
If you could remember, 2 days ago, Taban Deng was relieved of his duties by First Vice President Dr. Machar, and the letter was given to President Salva Kiir about that effect. But they went ahead with the hatching of the coup. Taban Deng Gai and Ezekiel Lol and two others went ahead and installed Taban Deng Gai to be the chairman of the SPLMIO. I would like to tell you that we have 28 members of the political bureau of the Central Committee for the SPLMIO. Only four out of these are in Juba. Only four out of 28. How would four people decide on the leadership of the whole organization like SPLMIO?
According to Ezekiel, Taban Deng and the others are interested in peace coming to South Sudan.
All of us are very interested in peace. Dr. Machar did not go out of Juba because he wishes to just go for a walkabout. His bodyguards were slaughtered. He was pushed out of Juba, and he was concerned about his safety. He told Salva Kiir, I need my safety guaranteed so that we go ahead with the peace agreement. Remember, it was Dr. Riek Machar and his team that signed the peace agreement. Majority of South Sudanese died during the last 2 years, and when this peace agreement became a light of hope for many civilians who are in the UN camps in South Sudan. But by installing Taban, it's actually exacerbating the plight of these people in the refugee camps. The people in South Sudan have suffered so long. We cannot play games by changing seats that are being changed by Salva himself.
The government is asking Dr. Riek Machar to return to Juba. Do you know where he is?
He's just around Juba. You know, they are hunting for him day and night. You know, actually, the ceasefire they said would have taken effect a few days ago or a week ago did not happen. Dr. Riek Machar was pushed out of his cantonment area. Contrary to IGAD resolution, Dr. Machar should go back to his area, and then people should start talking. But he was pushed out of his area. He's being hunted around Juba, and he's being told, you come and show yourself up. You'll be spared, and let's go ahead and things as usual. All of his bodyguards, 37 of them, were slaughtered in Juba that fateful day of Friday. He was not killed that day, but he was followed on Sunday. His house was razed down.
You said earlier that you think that you believe that President Salva Kiir is behind what is happening. Do you think President Salva Kiir is trying to assassinate or hurt Dr. Riek Machar?
The writings are on the wall. You know, Dr. Machar was almost killed in that attack that was hatched in J1, because if they could have succeeded that day, they could have gone with their plan. When they failed to assassinate Dr. Riek Machar that day, they went and razed down his house. If that is not an assassination attempt, what would you call it?
Goy Uyol Yol is the SPLM in opposition representative to Ethiopia and the African Union. He was speaking with me from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 26. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. In Zimbabwe, the Movement for Democratic Change, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, has issued an ultimatum for President Robert Mugabe to leave office for failing to run the country's affairs. The MDC has declared that it will embark on national protests next month to press President Mugabe to resign. Thomas Chiripasti has more from Harare.
The National Youth Chairperson of the MDCT, Epimo Chidziva, told a news conference at his party's Harvest House headquarters that Mr. Mugabe must step down by August 31st because he has failed to deliver on his re-election promises. Chidziva said his party would embark on national demonstrations next month until the head of state resigns under what the MDC Youth Assembly is calling the hashtag My Zimbabwe campaign.
We have been left with no choice but to start a campaign whose mission is to liberate our Zimbabwe from a clueless and greedy clique that only thinks about itself and nothing else. We urge all citizens to embrace the month of heroes, the month of August, as a month of action to liberate ourselves from Robert Mugabe. This country will remain ungovernable as long as Robert Mugabe and ZANU-PF does not heed the call.
He added that the proposed protest would be different this time because the police and the army, who have always crushed their previous demonstrations, are allegedly on their side.
The security forces have not spared by the economic challenges we face. We go to the same bank queues, to the same dilapidated clinics, to the same combis, yet a few are eating and enjoying on our behalf. Enough is enough. Come join in the mass. This revolution will require the assistance of everyone to succeed. We urge you to put down your arms and join the ordinary people as we push for the final onslaught of the regime.
Studio 7 failed to get a comment from ZANU-PF national spokesperson Simon Kayamoyo as he was not answering his mobile phone. However, some leaders of the ruling ZANU-PF party last week charged that they will take the law into their own hands if police do not arrest people who would be protesting against President Mugabe's administration. Although dissent against Mr. Mugabe is increasing, political analyst Pedzisai Ruhanya, director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, said the capacity of the MDCT youth to force Mr. Mugabe to resign is questionable.
What we can see or what we can say is that the environment for the mobilization of dissent is there. But whether they have the capacity to remove the head of state by 31 August, in my view, is questionable, and I don't think it's within their capacity.
Poor economic performance, high unemployment, and human rights violations are some of the issues that are driving opposition forces to protest against Mr. Mugabe. For his part, President Mugabe has told the nation that those protesting against him were foreign-sponsored and were bent on effecting what he described as illegal regime change in Zimbabwe. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
In a new survey by polling firm IPSOS, two-thirds of Kenyans say they support their government's decision to close down the Dadaab refugee camps and send all Somali refugees back home. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi that the survey also says less than a third of Kenyans want their troops to remain in Somalia.
In recent months, the Kenyan government has stated repeatedly it intends to close the Dadaab refugee camp in northeastern Kenya. The sprawling camp hosts more than 300,000 refugees, mostly from Somalia. The United Nations has urged Kenya to reverse its decision, citing the difficulties Somalis will face if they are forced to return to an unstable country. But Ipsos research analyst Tom Wolf says Kenyans strongly support closing the Dadaab.
And of that 69% aware, the same percent, 69%, support it, that is two-thirds. And the highest support in the regions was 82% in central, but only about one-third, that is 36%, in northeastern.
According to the UN Refugee Agency, 500 to 1,000 refugees voluntarily return home every week, and more than 15,000 have crossed the border since December. The researchers also asked Kenyans how they felt about their soldiers' presence in Somalia. Kenyan forces are part of 22,000-person African Union force deployed in Somalia to support the government and fight Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. Wolf said 56% of Kenyans want their troops out of Somalia. He notes that more than a third, 38%, said the troops should be posted at the Kenya-Somalia border to prevent cross-border incursions by terrorists. Interior Ministry spokesman Mwenda Njoka tells VOA some Kenyans are not aware the significance of having Kenyan soldiers in Somalia.
Our troops are there to stabilize and to help enhance security in Somalia, so that also it will also help that when we get to repatriate refugees back there, they are going into a safe and secure part of the country. Those ones who are demanding the return of our troops, they may not realize the magnitude and the effect, the role that our troops are playing as part of the army.
Center for Risk Management in Africa Director George Musamali says the security problem is bigger than the refugees.
That is not the solution. The solution is pacifying Somalia. We are having another challenge now coming out of southern Sudan. So if we withdraw the KDF from Somalia without having pacified the country, then definitely we are going to have more serious security challenges. Because I don't think our border is too porous. I don't think we have the resources of having military camps all over along the Kenyan-Somali border.
Kenya hopes to close the Dadaab camp later this year. Al-Shabaab vows its attack on Kenyan territory will continue until the government withdraws its forces from Somalia. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Here in the United States, the Democratic Party's National Convention opened on Monday in Philadelphia. Presumptive nominee and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton will later this week formally be the first woman to accept the nomination of a major political party in the United States. On the line from Philadelphia, it's viewers Vincent Mankori. Good morning to you, Vincent.
Good morning, James.
Vincent, we want to thank you once again for joining us, this time from the City of Brotherly Love. Now, there were some key speakers' speeches made yesterday at the opening of the convention, one of them by First Lady Michelle Obama. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it was really, I think, a very pleasant evening for Hillary Clinton. Michelle Obama, as you know, hasn't been necessarily very close to the Clintons since the 2008 when Hillary Clinton ran against her husband, President Obama, and Barack Obama. And this was a good night for Hillary that Michelle could come on and, you know, say great things about her. Of course, she talked about her husband and all the things that he had stood for over these years. And she says she believes Hillary Clinton is the kind of a president she could trust with the children of this nation, with the future of this nation. So she's the kind of a person that would carry on the legacy of President Barack Obama. That's what she said. And that was really good for Hillary Clinton, having First Lady Michelle Obama speaking this year, yesterday evening at the DNC.
Of course, also speaking was Senator Bernie Sanders. That's the man who came second in the Democratic Party primary. Now, his speech, there was great anticipation in terms of what he would say because of the millions of people who voted for him.
In fact, I spoke to a bunch of people who are very passionate about Bernie Sanders. I was in the arena, even on the streets of Philadelphia, a great number of people, others were protesting because they really, really loved Bernie Sanders. And they felt vindicated that over the months, Bernie Sanders has been saying the system is rigged, that the game was played dirty to exclude him from the nomination. And, of course, giving a speech yesterday evening at the Democratic National Convention, he did mention that. He did mention the fact that it is true. The system has not been fair to him. He is not happy. He is not necessarily satisfied with the results of that process. But what he told his supporters is that, you see, whichever way we look at it, it's important to support Hillary Clinton. But he did mention that what he started is a revolution and that it's not going to end with this election. In fact, listening to his speech yesterday, you felt that what he was saying is that, this election may happen. Hillary may be elected. She's not necessarily representing all the things that he talked about, but we have a movement. That's what he's telling his followers, that will continue way beyond the election. And therefore, I think he's positioning himself to be the person who shall be putting pressure on the Democratic Party to kind of fight for what he considers is a social justice causes for the citizens of America.
Of course, it seemed to me like the Republican Party convention, the Democratic Party convention got up to a very rocky start, particularly because of this embarrassing email leak.
Exactly. I mean, who would have expected that? The email leak, as I've just mentioned, was kind of a vindication of Bernie Sanders. Nobody understood exactly what Bernie Sanders was saying earlier when he said that the system is rigged, that is being disadvantaged. The emails were so kind of thinking reaffirmation of that. And it was so embarrassing, of course, to the entire DNC, to the committee, the chair lady, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, had to resign. In fact, initially she had planned to stay on and open the DNC, but I think the Bernie Sanders forces and others within the DNC overwhelmed upon her to literally resign and get away to avoid being a distraction to the DNC proceedings.
Vincent, we want to thank you very much for joining us from Philadelphia.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
That's VOA's Vincent Mankori speaking with us from the Democratic Party National Convention in Philadelphia. A film by a California documentary maker looks at the practice in Ethiopia's Omo Valley of killing children who are thought to be cursed and the efforts of a local man to rescue them. Mike O'Sullivan spoke with filmmaker John Rowe about the story behind the film.
The Omo Valley is a place of stunning beauty with a deeply held secret. Children labeled Mingi or cursed are thought to be responsible for misfortune and are killed. Photographer John Rowe only learned about this after many visits to the region.
The reason why people get sick, the reason why there's drought, the reason why there's famine is because of Mingi. It's because children's teeth first appear on the upper gum instead of the bottom gum.
Or because they are born out of wedlock, are disabled, or are twins. They are all killed.
They think what they are doing is right.
Rose documentary, Omo Child, The River and the Bush, tells the story. Roe and his son Tyler, the director of cinematography, met with denials when they first asked about the practice.
And they go, oh, no, no, no. It doesn't happen here. We've stopped it a long time ago. It only happens off in this far village, those backward people, though it's not us. We don't do that.
The Karo tribe has now stopped the practice, largely because of the efforts of one of its members. Wale Labuko learned at age 15 of two sisters killed before he was born.
I said, I want to stop this thing.
Word of Labuko's work has been spread by the documentary, which was part of a series at the Skirball Cultural Center featuring winners of the Social Impact Media Awards.
We feel so connected to the world now via the internet, yet there are still stories that are unknown to us.
Labuko's work isn't done.
I love my people.
There's two other tribes that continue to practice Mingi and kill children, and he's working hard to try and prevent that. In the meantime, he's now rescued 46 children.
And thanks to Roe, more people know about it. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Members of the SPLM in opposition nominated Tabar Dengai over the weekend to become South Sudan's acting first vice president to replace Riek Machar, who went into hiding shortly after fighting broke out in the capital, Juba, in early July. Now, today, Tuesday, Tabar Deng will be sworn in as first vice president by President Salva Kiir. The SPLA in opposition says Tabar Deng has the support of the entire opposition movement. And that's it for this Tuesday, July 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying to all of you in Africa, have a great day.
Next time on Street Talk Africa, Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss the Democratic National Convention and what a Hillary Clinton presidency could mean for Africa. Tune in to Street Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.